Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to the USA Football Coach and Coordinator Podcast. We continue on with our lessons from 2018 with our national conference speakers, and joining me today is a seven-time state champion from West Virginia, Martinsburg High School, Coach Dave Walker. Coach Walker, great to have you back on the podcast.
Hey, thank you, Keith, for having me.
Coach, this is number seven, number three in a row, and a 42-game win streak, which is the longest win streak in West Virginia. So you guys are having a great ride right now.
We really are. Our kids are just working really hard, and the community support's been great. And it's a good time to be a Bulldog.
Yeah, this year you guys kind of have made a name for yourselves offensively. I know last year you guys had a big point differential between you and the opponent. This year it was 732 points to 127. That's 56, a little over 56 a game to a little under 10 a game. Pretty incredible streak there. And that's something that really you continued on through the playoffs. You outscored opponents 157 to 41 through the playoffs. And we're excited that you're going to be talking about your offense, which, you know, when we talked the last time, you mentioned a lot of it has wing T roots, but you're using some modern things like the read game, like the quarterback RPO. And that's going to be part of your talk here at National Conference. And we'll dig into that in a bit. But the focus of today's podcast is to look back on this season and reflect on some of the things you've learned and taken away from 2018. Coach, every season presents something different, and we have things that when we reflect on it, we're able to learn from. What's something that really stuck out for you in that regard this year?
You know, the fact that everybody loses great players every year, and we lost a great group from the 17 season. And, you know, you worry about kids if you're going to be able to replace this kid or replace that kid, but just seeing our kids mature and see how they work in the off season, and you always have one or two surprises, kids that, you know, you're not really counting on, but then all of a sudden, you know, when they show up, they're ready to go. And just kind of reassures me that, you know, we're doing the right things, getting them ready and having faith in that they're doing what they're supposed to do, and watching them mature. It's a really fun process.
And, you know, before we got to talking, you mentioned to me how important it is to get your best 11 on the field. And it's the opportunities, though, for some of those other guys down the line to become one of those best 11. I think a lot of that goes back to practice and preparation. So when you look at, you know, the way you get some of those guys ready who aren't on the field yet, your second teamers, maybe even your third teamers, your JVs, what are some of the things you do that are effective in that regard?
Well, I think those guys getting scout team reps are really important. I mean, our scout team is, I mean, those guys that don't play a lot on Friday night, they're just as valuable to us because they're giving us the prep time during the week, and just getting those guys to give us good scout reps, good quality reps, and then when they're doing their individual drills, just making sure that they're doing them at full speed. And we always feel like we do a good job, you know, developing our players and with what we do, you know, year-round. I think, you know, scout team reps are crucial in the development of a young kid.
That's always not an easy thing to get buy-in on. I know even at the college level, you know, we struggled, you know, with a big roster, with a lot of kids, talented kids, to get the look we wanted out of the scout team. Is there anything you do to help emphasize that and really make the importance of that part of your culture?
Well, even though we're running the other team's offense or running the other team's defense, we're still coaching our kids in effort, and we trickle in, you know, some ones or twos that aren't maybe are one-way players. We trickle them in. So, you know, we make sure if a kid's just, you know, starting offensive tackle and he doesn't play in defense, he's usually taking scout team reps as well, you know, for what we do at the high school level. But I think when you trickle in a couple of varsity guys and you still coach those young kids, coach, you know, sometimes you do have to coach effort. Because those young guys do get a little intimidated or you know, they know they're outmatched, but, you know, you still can give forth effort. So we coach effort.
Kind of going along with that theme, that you were faced with the quarterback conflict situation, potentially, but you've navigated that, and you actually had a two-quarterback system, both throwing for over 1,200 yards and You made it work with that. Talk to us a little bit about, first of all, you know, moving through the preseason, moving through all your stuff to get ready for this. How was that playing out with those two guys that, you know, I guess you made that decision that you were going to use to?
Well, the initial plan was for one to separate himself from the other. And, you know, one never really did. They were pretty neck and neck, you know, and it got to the point where one had, you know, a different skill set. So one was a better runner and the other was a little better passer. So we started using those guys. And then it got, but it did get to a point to where one kid, you know, about the third or fourth game, one kid did really kind of separate himself, but it wasn't to the fact that one of the other kids still wasn't valuable and wasn't, you know, what we needed him for, because he also helped us win games. He's a really good player. One was a senior, one was a junior. And, we would use those guys in situational, you know, but we would rotate them in during the series or let them play by series. And, you know, a lot of them did a lot of the same things, but, you know, it just depended on what we were looking for and what we were seeing defensively. But it ended up being a good thing because one of the young men was also our starting safety. So, you know, it helped that he needed a little bit of a break as well. So our kids bought into it. You know, I wasn't so sure about it at first, but I think once they saw the success that we were having, I think, you know, winning solves a lot of problems.
But that's always, I guess, something that can be an obstacle or a challenge is guys getting in one corner or the other with the two potential quarterbacks. How do you avoid that? I know you mentioned everybody bought in. I guess how do you get that buy-in or avoid those situations where guys are either the quarterbacks are jockeying for position and trying to get guys behind them or guys are just kind of doing it naturally, like, hey, this guy should be our quarterback.
Well, I think that, you know, both those quarterbacks are competitors. They both want to be the guy every down. But I think you've packaged things together so both of them are successful when they're getting reps. You don't ask one of them to do something that he's not real good at. And I think if both of them, your practice, offensively, your practice goes as your quarterback goes, at least for us. So if both of those guys are looking really good in practice and they're distributing the ball, we try to keep a balance in distribution of what we're doing with the football as far as, you know, who's getting the ball. And as long as they're delivering and we don't put them in a situation, you know, as coaches, you got to put kids in situations where they will be successful. So, you know, I didn't go out and ask one kid to go do one thing that he's not good at and the other kid is. So I think it just comes down to organization and how you present it to the team and how they look in practice.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about next. I think the biggest challenge in that when you have two working with the first team is how do you organize those reps? You mentioned both threw for over 1,200 yards, so they had ability as passers, and I imagine shed some light on it, but I imagine there was a lot of crossover and those types of things. But you mentioned to me before we got started, one was more of a runner. So how do you make sure that – I guess you're getting all the work you need for both of those guys – to be successful on Friday night?
Well, yeah, it got to a point the one kid, you know, depending on what we're seeing defensively, I felt like there were certain games that we were going to use that quarterback more as a runner to give us that extra guy in the box that they would have to defend. Yeah, I think a lot of it, at one point, we started giving one a little more reps of practice. At some point, you've got to declare, we're going to start the game with this kid. This kid is going to come in the second series or third series, or he may come in halfway through the first series, just depending on the game plan. But I think in practice, you know, we started giving the reps a little more to the other kid because he was going to be required to do more because of his running ability. But at the same time, when we would put the other young man in, we made sure we tried to showcase what he did well. And, of course, if either one of them just handed off, it didn't matter. But we tried to package our script as when we're using one kid, this is what we're running from. And it's just a matter of just, you know, being prepared before you go into practice.
Coach, it's interesting to me that you would bring them in mid-series. I've seen coaches certainly do this, something by quarter, something by series. But you mentioned that you might bring a guy in mid-series. What would be the idea behind that? And, you know, again, how do you deal with that change? Are you just really looking at this as, you know, any kind of personnel grouping where you're bringing different people in?
Yeah, I look at it as, you know, a lot of people, if you don't have if you have two quarterbacks, that means you may not have one. But I feel like we had two good ones. But we would change them sometimes during the series, sometimes depending on down the distance, sometimes depending on what we were seeing, in the box or what we were seeing defensively. But also I found that I felt like that when teams were preparing for us, they had to almost prepare for two different they had to take time out of their schedule to prepare for what we're doing a little differently because of our two quarterback system. So I thought it probably interfered or gave the other teams a little more to have to work on what they normally would.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I can think back to my time at the college level when we had a very good starting quarterback. The kid was 6'3", 225, could run a 4.6, could make all the throws. I really didn't use him as a runner a ton because he could distribute the ball, and I didn't like him getting banged up. But, we had this other guy who was really dynamic and could run, could throw, not as good as the other guy, but we would use him every single game. There was some kind of package for him. It was the same thing. We thought of it as a personnel grouping, and that's how we sold it to our players. And I can even remember at times, our guy, our starter, saying, hey, keep him in. He's hot. That's what you want to see with those kinds of situations. You want to get that buy-in. That guy see it. The quarterback position can be substituted just like any others if you do it right.
I agree, and a lot of it depends on the kids that you have playing. I mean, both of our guys were unselfish, and I think as long as the team was having success, that they didn't care. The team comes before them as individuals, and I think it just depends on who you have in the situation you're in.
I know you mentioned to me that schematically you guys started to lean more on your power and counter game with the QBs and getting into a little bit of that misdirection like you used to do in the wing T. Talk to us a little bit about some of the things you incorporated run game wise and how that stressed the defense.
Well, I think one of our best quarterback run was just a counter tray with the action, the play action across the formation with the back, and then pull the guard and kick out the end and then get through with the tackle. And that was a big running play for us with the quarterback. And then we'd also run the belly series with the quarterback, which is pretty much like an ISO. And then, of course, we did some of the outside zone stuff with the quarterback. But as far as referring it to or relaying it to the wing tee, we were a big belly and counter tray a crisscross counter type guy with our quarterback.
Yeah, with the belly, I don't hear a lot of people talk belly, especially the wing tee. Some guys will refer to their inside zone as a belly play, but the wing tee belly, that really is an ISO. And so out of the traditional set, it's the halfback leading for the fullback to the open side, to the split end side. And you see that blocked in different ways depending on the front. I know crossback was a popular way where you would have the tackle come down and the guard just pull right behind him to the other guy. How were you guys blocking this play?
Just like that, we would be on the front, but we would either base block it or we would cross block it, and they would call it out. If we got a three technique, in five, we would probably cross it, or we would Xerox the play and run to the other side if we're getting a three. We try to run all our stuff to the bubble, to the one technique. And, so a lot of it depends on if we got caught running toward a three, we'd probably cross block it. But if we got two twos or if we're in front, then we would just base block it and it just becomes ISO or power.
Now, with that, was it something that you'd have to check or did your lineman just take care of that with a call?
If we didn't change the direct or change the the play to the opposite side, they would make the call. They had calls that they could make to communicate with each other.
Because you see a lot of teams who do get into the quarterback run game then doing a lot of the play action. So you think back to, I guess it's been done a long time and all over the place, but like the Tim Tebow days where he'd catch that ball and take a step forward like he's going and rock back and throw the football around. Do you guys do any play action off of that?
We have done that play. As a matter of fact, we used to call it Tebow, and it was more of a goal-line type deal. But I thought we've done it in practice a couple of times. We never actually ran it again. But some of our play action, we'd have like an RPO off the counter action things we worked on, but we weren't. A lot of our play action stuff would come off of the outside zone stuff with the running backs, not so much the quarterback stuff. We tinkered with it a little bit, but that was something that we never really got into. We never really had to. We got to a situation where things, you know, were going pretty well. So when you're moving the ball pretty well, you end up your playbook kind of gets shorter. You know, the list gets shorter. You don't have to do a whole lot.
Right, right. I am interested in your RPO off of that counter. So first of all, I would imagine you're running this out of a spread set. So is that 2x2 or 3x1?
2x2 or either one, but basically 2x2.
And then, so you're bringing your running back across. Is he then accounting for that end so that the, you know, that guy's not in the quarterback face? And then you got the two pullers like you just would on counter. And then are you reading the guy in the box? You're reading the hang player?
It depends on we've done a second level and a third level with it. We can see if we can try to get a home run with it. But usually we're reading either the center or the linebacker and trying to get ready behind there with a slot.
So, yeah, you're running slants behind that then?
Yeah. We can tag it with different routes, but our primary would be a slant.
The third level RPO is interesting. I know a lot of guys say it's impossible to you know, not have your guys down the field. So number one, how do you avoid that situation when, you know, you are going to the third level RPO to make sure that you're not illegally downfield with your linemen?
We got called once for it. Sometimes, you know, you're rolling the dice with it. You know, sometimes you might get called. What we do with it a lot of time, I mean, according to whatever the pre-snap is, sometimes you get a pre-snap and he knows it turns into play action. There's not no run option. He knows he's going to pull it and throw it right now. So if we get something of that nature, then he's going to be getting rid of the ball before anybody can get downfield. But it's kind of tricky because you got to teach your guys up front to be aggressive and get off the ball.
Right, right. Yeah, that's critical to the RPO. With that, you know, just thought process wise, I had some three-level RPOs and what I would do, and basically kind of train the quarterback up, like, I still want you to read this, but if I'm calling it, we've seen something that we think we have the shot. So right. more often than not, we expect if we call it, we're going to be trying to hit the home run. Is that kind of the thought process for you, or how do you drill that into the quarterback as far as mindset?
That's exactly. If I want to run, I'm just going to call the run. But we feel like we're going to get a shot at it, and it ends up being play action pass.
Right.
Sometimes we put an RPO and it sounds really elaborate, but sometimes it's just a simple, you know, we're faking and throwing it. So we just got guys pulling with it at the same time. But you know, we call it. We're looking for a pass first, to be honest. But then. But we've also handed it off and gotten big gainers out of that at times as well. So sometimes you don't know. The kids have to do what they're coached to do.
Coach, looking back at the season and all the things you do, and I know we talked about your program and some of that in a previous podcast, and I'll put that link in our show notes for our listeners so they could go back to it because I really enjoyed that one too. But, you know, for the 2018 season, when you look back on it, what's something you feel that really gave your team the winning edge?
You know, just the fact that, you know, how they worked, they played really fast, they played really physical, and they were, a lot of people, even though we've been really successful, I thought at times we were kind of the underdog just because of the group we had before and what we had lost, and the fact that these guys answered the call, there's a lot of tradition, they put high expectations on themselves, and they made sure they saw it through, and just proud of the way they worked, the way they responded.
Well, Coach, we're excited that you're going to be a speaker at our national conference, and you're going to be talking a little bit about some of the things we touched on here, your run game and your RPOs. Just give us a brief overview of what you can expect if you're going to national conference.
Well, first of all, I appreciate you guys having me down. I mean, you guys do a fantastic job with it. It's well run. You met some great people from all over the country, and it's second to none. I look forward to it. I just, you know, talking about what we do offensively, and when we talk, we'll give our presentation, and we open it up, and if people have questions they want to ask, everything I do, I've gotten from somebody else, and I'm eager to pass it on as well. So it's a great experience, and I would encourage anyone to attend if they can.
Yeah, Coach, you and I were talking about the experience before we got going. If you would just share your thoughts on our national conference and how it's a little bit different than other things you might attend as a football coach.
Well, I think when you go to your average clinic, it's usually a regional thing. So you see a lot of the guys that you see all the time. You see the opponents, you see them. Other teams, local teams. When you go to this, you're in Orlando, you're meeting people from California, guys from California and Georgia, all over the place, and you talk ball with them. And it's funny because you find out that you really have a lot in common, even though you're far removed from each other. And it's just a great experience to get to network, meet new people, and talk football. It's a great experience.
I know I joke with all the guys who have been there before. It always comes up, the topic of this is the best food conference, best football coach event you'll be to, the food there. And that's no lie. That was one of the things the first year. I could not believe the spread and the food that was put together.
Yeah, most football coaches, that's very important. So you've got to eat well. And the fact that it's in sunny Orlando doesn't help either. It's just a great – I've never been to Orlando until last year, and it was just a great experience for me, and
yeah, and for our listeners out there, you can register. Go to usafootball.com/NC19podcast. Enter the code podcast99 to save. That's how you register for it. I highly encourage you looking into this. It is a great experience. I know the first time I went, I was just blown away by the spirit of camaraderie there and guys just helping each other get better. So we're excited to have you there, Coach. Thank you for taking the time to be on the podcast. Again, best of luck to you and your team in 2019.
Hey, I appreciate it, Keith.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.